Greetings, friends. It is I, Dee Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I woke up at 4 this morning. It's crazy. I've been reading this book called Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. It's almost too inspiring or something. It's like the guy is some form of immortal being. Like he's like a super athlete or super ultra runner. So he does like 150 mile marathons. He basically burrows through mountains with his will. And he's written this incredible book that just, it's infectious. And I started off listening to it thinking like, I don't know about this guy. And then by the end, I'm listening to it on a treadmill at 5 a.m. at the gym. And I know that might just be everyday life for the 20% of my podcast audience who are ultra marathon runners. But for me, it's like the second coming of Christ to find myself running again and exercising again. And this Goggins book mixed in with a healthy dose of Neville Goddard, who you should also check out, has really got me going. Also, the early mornings are psychedelic. And if you want some easy way to feel superior to everyone in your house or your neighborhood, just wake up at 4 a.m. and look outside and think to yourself, wow, I did it. I pulled myself out of bed at 4 a.m. while all these weak, miserable people dream and sleep, I rise to power. Then repeat the seven sacred names of Asmodeus, turn yourself into a bat, and fly around your neighbor's house as they sleep, and look through the window and watch them as they sleep, and judge them, and then fly back to your house and turn back into yourself and go back to sleep. So I do that every morning. And I wouldn't have been able to do it if not for this incredible book by David Goggins. So you guys should definitely check it out. We have a fantastic podcast for you today. Corey Allen, host of the Astral Hustle podcast, is here with us today. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some quick business. I love socks. I love getting new socks, which is why I'm incredibly excited about this week's sponsor, Bombas. Because not only do they make some damn fine socks, they're also helping the planet. Because socks are the number one most requested item in homeless shelters, and Bombas donates one pair of socks for every sock purchased. They've donated over 20 million pairs and counting. They're made from super soft natural cotton, and every pair is designed with arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed that's supportive but not too thick. My new favorites are their new Merino wool socks, designed to be breathable, dry, and never itchy, with just the right amount of thickness. These are high-quality, powerful socks, and let me tell you, when I'm wearing them, I feel like I've placed my feet in an angel's mouth. There is a really quick, easy way to completely transform your life, which is just get all new socks. And right now, you can save 20% on your first purchase when you shop at bombas.com/Duncan. That's bombas.com/Duncan to save 20%. Bombas.com/Duncan. 20% off your wonderful new socks. Plus, you're helping the planet. And you're helping the podcast. So go get some new socks. My sweet loves, it's time for you to plunge into the hardcore deep waters of the DTFH over at patreon.com/DTFH. Sign up. You'll get an extra hour-long thing every month, as well as access to the DTFH Discord server and just random stuff I pop up there and commercial-free episodes of the DTFH. We also have a shop located at DuncanTrussell.com. And thank you to those of you who continue to use our Amazon portal. Today's guest has just released a brand new book called Now Is the Way, an unconventional approach to modern mindfulness. He's a meditation teacher, and he's got a fantastic podcast called The Astral Hustle. Please welcome to the DTFH, Corey Allen.
It's
Corey Allen, welcome to the DTFH. It is so nice to get to chat with you in person instead of just emailing.
Oh, man. I'm really glad to be here, and thank you. It's so glad. I'm also so happy to be chatting in person.
It's really cool. I checked out your, well, what I could check out of your book, because it's still in pre-order. But I was sort of like looking through the beginning of it and realizing that we're part of this like community, like the people in the Fords giving you talking about the book in the beginning are people that I've had on my podcast, and many of the people you've had on your podcast, I've had on my podcast. And it's, I just realized like, what is this thing that we all seem to kind of be part of? What would you call it?
I think it's a new emergence of like, you know, I look at knowledge or wisdom or like the inner path and seeking all that stuff. It's like, I don't really look at individuals per se. I look at it as like this long scroll moving through time. And like, we're all, humans are all these individual cells that create the species of the human critter. And I look at the collective like neural connections between all those things as this long river of data and information. And for, you know, thousands of years, and increasingly so in the complexity as civilization and the modern age and society and more people have emerged out of Earth and so forth, have continued to complexify, that story has gotten more intense and more streamlined and so forth. And so throughout time, you know, people have been picking up the pen and writing on that scroll and then dying and then picking up the pen, and new people pick up the pen and write on that thing. And it's just emerging and emerging and emerging, and it's always changing shape. You know, like back in the day, there used to be like pre-technology, of course, there was gurus and things like that. And who was that? That was some dude hanging around that if you had a question about, you know, an existential question, a spiritual question, a question about life or whatever, you would go find that guy that was a guru and you'd say, yo, man, I got this issue. What do you know about it? And he would tell you. But now those people are irrelevant pretty much. Now we have Google instead of guru, right? So now when you have a question, you can go ask Google. And now Google will tell you, you know, all these different individuals, all these different books and all these different things you can read. So I really think what's happening is that all of these, you know, these collection of individuals that you were just referring to, we're like this kind of singular, connected hive mind of the human collective conscious wisdom that's all been maturing and evolving up until this point in time.
Interesting. Well, I got it. The thing about Google, I think there is a difference, man. And I'm not trying to like, I mean, I Neem Karoli Baba, I would say, is my guru. And because of that, I will seem suspect as though I'm trying to defend the guru formation thing, which I think is like really quite dangerous generally. And I think more and more it's being shown to just be, if anything, that time definitely does seem to be passing. That being said, I think a difference in the data stream that comes from Google or from the internet versus like human contact, I think there's a big difference, but it's tricky in the sense that you can start thinking it is the same, which is, I had this great conversation with Damien Eccles, and we were talking about the transmission of information, the scroll, so to speak, and the disciplic succession, as it's sometimes called, the, what's it called, whispered transmission. It has all these great names for it. But he was telling me, and I think I have experienced this to some degree, that it is a combination of just basic philosophical concepts mixed in with something that's a little bit like the Olympic torch, except instead of starting wherever off of, you know, an Olympic flame and then traveling, it's moving through time. And it seems to have started, quite often the stories are, it starts from some messiah being, but a collective maybe, or even something more than that. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like,
I do, yeah. Yeah.
And do you, you know, and this is the Dharma transmission that they talk about sometimes. Do you feel like you've gotten that transmission, like you've gotten the download in a traditional way?
I feel like we we all have the download, and it's a matter of clearing away all the stuff that's been piled on top of it to kind of get back to it, the natural brilliance. And I totally agree with what you're talking about as far as like the guru idea. Human contact is like crucial and essential to, I think, to like just being a person that's learning things in the world. But I guess the point I was trying to make was that like knowledge and information is no longer being held hostage by one person. Now there's like all these different places, and that's whenever I was mentioning all the different people that you can find, you know, through the internet and all the books and all that stuff. We're living in this amazing time where like there isn't just one person that's guarding all of the information. Like it's everywhere. And I think that's such a useful, you know, turn for this type of stuff to take, because it makes it where you inherently kind of understand that there isn't just one way. There are a multitude of ways, and all of them have value, and you can find what speaks to you and extract, you know, and learn from those different things and kind of build your own individual narrative of seeking that is what you need, because we all need something different, of course.
I've been working on my discipline lately, and I'm, you know, I'm always trying to learn music these days, but that's something we have in common. And not just learn music the way I in the past have just dabbled or whatever, but really going online, taking courses, studying music theory, and I'm astounded by how easy it is to learn how to play music these days. I mean, forget all the guru bullshit. And like, if you wanted to learn guitar in the old days, you would have to find a guitar teacher. You needed to go and hang out with people who play the guitar at the very least. But you couldn't go on YouTube and instantaneously have access to thousands of guitar lessons. And what's fascinating to me about the internet is it is such a beautiful reflection of us, in the sense that back to back we have guitar lessons. You could take free classes from Harvard. You can make contact with some of the smartest people, at least the smartest public figures who are putting themselves out there today, through Twitter, Patreon. And yet also, there is this ocean of just shit, right? Like, you know what I mean? Definitely. And like, when I watch my habituations and my pattern on the internet, it's always wild to like realize, like, why am I choosing to, why do I keep going back to some of these data streams that are inevitably just hellscapes? And looking at the foreword of your book and reading what I could of it, it made me want to talk to you a little bit about that, because I think that decision to siphon bad energy, you were talking about peace being the energy, I think, versus fear, right? And that decision to like go to the fear, go to the fucking fossil fuel, go to the like polluting energy that gives you this, definitely gives you a rush. Fear will put a spring in your step, but man, it's not very sustainable. And the decisions you make in that frightened state are quite often wrong. But why, Corey, why do we pick fear over peace? If there is this thing that you're saying is in us, why aren't we there? Why don't we want to go there?
I think it's like, it's not that we're choosing fear. It's that we grow up in this circumstance where we're bullied into being fearful. And it's because, you know, there's obviously a bazillion reasons, one of which is we live in, you know, in a society where like America is in the business of making things famous. And if you're not famous, a lot of people feel like normalness isn't enough. Being normal is failing. We're being told that we're not enough, so that we need to keep buying new things. We're marketed to, like, well, if you have this, you'll feel okay. If you buy this, you'll feel okay. If you wear that, you'll feel okay. And so we're all feeling like less than. We're feeling like we're scared. you know, the modern world is freaky, it's complex. And so, you know, we're just born into this space of like, feeling insignificant and like nobody, and like we need to kind of, in a animalistic way, almost get ours. You know, that's sort of this theme that is really beat into people for whatever reason. And what was amazing for me anyway was like realizing that based upon my, you know, family inheritance, I'll call it, you know, my $5 billion that I inherited now. You know,
I inherited a billion. Wow. Five's great.
Oh, though. I got to end this, man. If only a billionaire. Yeah. Man. Anything under three.
I'm sorry, man. Well, I'm working at it. I'm trying to inherit again.
Well, just let me know whenever you can and we'll pick this up again.
All right. Well, nice chatting with you, man.
This was okay, actually. Yeah, this is okay. no, but anyway, you know, like, you know, your family inherited programs, operating script that you get from your family circumstances and so forth. And yeah, man, you know, I had a lot of pain, a lot of suffering based upon, you know, being loved conditionally, being taught by my father that he was this Dallas like banker kind of Tarantino movie type of guy that was very much this alpha conservative fellow that always carried guns and stuff. And
I had one of those.
Yeah. And wait a second. Maybe we're synchronizing here.
And then you took my inheritance, motherfucker.
Well, hey man, that's the game, Duncan.
so you got the like power dad.
Yes.
Download.
Got the power dad download and the all that, and so, you know, then he wasn't around, you know, and so it was like I had a lot of resentment, a lot of fear.
Wasn't around because of the divorce? Your parents got divorced, or wasn't around because he was a workaholic?
No, divorced. Yeah, divorced. And he just didn't really have much interest, you know, right? So he was doing his own thing. And so, yeah, man, like that left me with a lot of resentment. And then just, you know, otherwise being, as I said, just being growing up in a destructive attachment environment with conditional love and emotional manipulation and being parented through fear where, you know, I wasn't able to know what to trust, know what to believe, like what is real, like what I'm being gaslit constantly is kind of how I felt. And it left me feeling calcified and externally and scared and just tons of anxiety and cynical. And ultimately I began using my intellect as a way to like chop down everyone else so that I could feel secure. So if I could like undress someone intellectually really fast and show them that I could think, you know, in particular ways, it'd make them sort of like, I don't know, maybe it's like a jiu-jitsu move. Like you got to get someone to where they're like intellectually about to tap, and then you can feel comfortable because you know that you've got that handle on them, you know? And so,
yeah, I know what you mean, man. I know that you mean you like, because you're insecure and because you, I'm sorry. Can you hold one second?
Sure,
I don't mean to interrupt this, but my chihuahua is about to shit on my podcast tapestry. Hold on.
It's a good metaphor.
It's like,
man.
It's so bad and embarrassing. I remember when I started realizing I was doing that and like just the weightiness of that and the neediness of that. I mean, you know, you're around somebody and they don't understand why they're probably feeling tired when they're hanging out with you. And, or you know what I mean? They're like, why? It's like, there's something. And it's because you're literally like, want them to be your daddy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's it. That's it. And it's like, you find yourself as an adult, like, whenever you're walking with someone else, you're letting you're like following them in this most nuanced little microtonal type of way where it's like you're walking together, but you're really following them like a little kid. You're just not holding hands, even though you're like 6'3", you know?
Yeah.
So here's how I chrysalised and hatched out of that was feeling all of that stuff we were just talking about, all that nastiness. You know, I imagine you probably had this same thing, man, is like just because of where you seem to have ended up, an insecure billionaire.
The classic problem.
Classic problem.
No matter how many fucking fountains I get around my mansion, I still can't sleep, man.
It's crazy, too. And the fact that they're all filled with your own piss is, you'd think cum. That would do it.
I tried but... piss. It didn't work. Then someone said yeah. cum. Didn't work. Because now the cum birds keep me up at night.
Yeah. Those cum birds are having, their feathers look beautiful, though, after a couple of months of that.
Undeniably beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. You can really, it's where I do a lot of my truth gazing, is into the kaleidoscopic feathers of cum birds.
What did Gandhi say? I learned everything I know from the cum birds.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. He said, my knowledge went tits up whenever I started gazing into cum birds. Okay. So, underneath all of the suffering, the external suffering, the, destructive, vinegary narcissism out into the world, I always had this deep connection and awareness of like true compassion, of like real love, of this desire for peace, because being in a chaotic space emotionally and physically, I've really learned, I was shown what the lesson was to, like, this is why peace is important, because this is what it's like when it isn't here. And a lot of people grow up, in a rather stable situation. But whenever you grow up in a emotionally or physically chaotic type of situation, you really honor and you have this integral connection towards, like, okay, peace is fucking valuable, man. And I always had that underneath all that other stuff. And it was weird. It was like I was living, like, disconnected from who I was outwardly into the world, right? And so I randomly overheard, whenever I was a teenager, I randomly overheard someone mentioning about, like, who, if they could talk to a couple of people, like, dead or alive, who would they be? They mentioned Jesus, Nietzsche, and a few other people, which, like, we could stop right there. That's an interesting enough, like, dinner table to have is yeah. Jesus and Nietzsche. And so I was randomly, like, walking through a bookstore one day, and I saw Nietzsche on the back of the spine of a book, and I went over and picked it up, and I was like, holy shit. This, like, I felt completely incompatible with the rest of the world, but this is, like, how I think. This is the math of how my conceptual mind works. And I became obsessed with, like, Western philosophy, right? So I went way deep into Western philosophy, and then just following some of the bridges of the hippie philosophers like Terence McKenna and Robert Anton Wilson and people like that, I then found my way to Eastern philosophy. And then once I read that, I was like, this is not only what I think, this is how I think, this is what I believe, this is the kind of the pathways in which I see are possible in the world. And I became obsessed with Eastern philosophy, and that's how I learned how to meditate, was as a teenager privately in my room. I had this sort of like Viktor Frankl moment where I realized no matter what was happening outside of my skin in the world, that the world in my body, my inner life, is mine. And I can begin to turn like those broken pieces into, I can melt that gold down and reform it into what I know is possible, and then allow that begin to emerge and hatch out of my body into the world. And I just started meditating and trying all these different practices, seeing what worked, and just quietly, one step at a time, one day at a time, following that path. And what became fascinating to me was that I saw, like, as I just continued on, and I would read, I got way into psychology and neuroscience and all of this stuff, and I could feel, like, as I would read, I could feel stoned after I was done reading a lot of this stuff. And I realized, like, that's my brain, literally, like, the horizon of my mind is getting pushed back because I'm, like, the wattage of my brain is getting turned up. And I got addicted to that feeling. And as I continued doing these practices, I started realizing, like, wait a second, I'm a different person than I was 3 months ago. Like, I don't feel as angry. I don't feel as scared. I'm able to, like, rest in my skin. Like, my hands don't shake when I go to put the key in the keyhole, the front door, anymore. Like, I'm not as anxious. Fuck.
Did you find something when that's the times I've had that happen, I realize how addicted I am to that anxiety. Like, when it's not there, there is, I don't know, did you have that sense of, like, shit, man, that was me, or that was, like, that was one of the defining qualities of who I am?
Yeah.
Being anxious, freaked out, neurotic, weird, whatever. And, yeah. And then when it's gone, when you're doing the work and you get these little spaces in between freakouts that are longer than you're used to, there is a sense of like, shit, did I just lose something? It's really kind of pathetic. No.
It's a beautiful part of the process, man. And you did lose something. You lost an old story of who you told yourself who you were. It's like every big breakthrough I've had in my life, or, you know, they're not even like, you know, these big theatrical breakthrough, but like these big moments I had of deeper insights, of hatching, of continuing to follow this new image and idea of myself into the kaleidoscopic bridge of the future. Like every time that happened, there was like a mourning period. And it was because the I, in quotes, that I believed I was dead. And it was like, okay, that guy who was wearing death metal t-shirts and pissed off and angry at everyone, it was like this Nietzschean that thought he was smarter than everybody. That guy's dying. And like, it was who I was, but he's gone now. And like, I'm going to sit with that feeling. And so I know what you mean. There's that I call those are like growing pains, you know, but it's like internal growth as opposed to physical growth.
It reminds me of like when you have a shitty piece of furniture in your house and sometimes I'll have a thing around me for the longest time. Like, for example, right now I'm looking over at the corner of my podcast studio and I have an overturned spray bottle of cleaner next to a record player that I don't use. And it's ugly. But I've just let it sit there and ignore it. But it's always there. But anytime you take something like that out of your room, you feel that space. Mm-hmm. And it's a strange thing of like, God damn it, I was attached to the clutter. I was attached to the I was attached to the whatever the fuck it was I was hoarding. And God, what weird creatures we are, huh? It's like you see those. Well, you know, I don't know. They said it was pathetic. I thought it was kind of cool from an evolutionary perspective. Not pathetic. They said it was sad. But this story emerged of these like bees or hornets building their nest out of plastic, mm-hmm. you know, or you see these creatures that construct their shells out of like plastic floating in the ocean. And that's, I think, what a lot of us are like in this dimension, right? Like we're like gathering, we gather the story, the shit story, and we assemble this crazy fucking shell thing, and then we just huddle inside of it and hiss at anything that walks by.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
it seems abnormal to me. You're a teenager meditating and reading Nietzsche and like coming to some brilliant realization. I'm just these days, I think, coming to these kinds of realizations. The great peaceful kingdom in the heart and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, it wasn't, you know, like an easy, just like, you know, light switch type of thing. It faded in over the period of a long time, long time. But, you know, I don't know if it's just, I have thought about like, how was that possible? Like no one in my family were readers even, much less being into something esoteric. And I got way into Crowley, into Sufi mysticism and all that stuff at the same time. And, you know, I ended up meeting Robert Anton Wilson whenever I was 18. And then I went and, you know, spent time with him in person when I was 21.
How did that happen? Can you tell me that story?
Yeah, sure, man. I'd be glad to. So basically, you know, in really diving into all this obsessive compulsive reading, which, you know, in hindsight, I realized that, like, I was putting blinders on to use that obsession with philosophy and even Zen Buddhism, you know, which at the time I was still coming from the head mind, not the heart mind. It was like, here's another way to be stringent and clinical about reality. Mm-hmm. This is just a more express way to depersonalize, you know, through Zen Buddhism. Anyway, amidst all of that, I just randomly found a copy of Prometheus Rising whenever I was 17 or 18. And, yeah, just read it and was like, oh, holy shit, this guy, you know, particularly at the time, it was like, this is kind of the, I grew up on like really on stand-up comedy a lot too. So like Carlin was like a huge influence to me growing up. My brother and I listened to Carlin like nonstop from the time I was like, you know, 12 or something.
Cool.
And so I always had that comedic sort of voice in the back of my head, right? And so like reading Robert Anton Wilson was like, oh wow, this guy is kind of like Nietzsche, kind of like Leary, kind of like the Buddha, but also kind of like Carlin. And that was like the perfect parent god for me to begin to become cool. obsessed with.
Yeah, he's the best.
Yeah, I got really obsessed with him. And then what happened was they started making a documentary about him called Maybe Logic. And I like crowdsourced the like whatever, I don't know what it even was at that point, if it was Kickstarter or if it's anything like that, but I remember like helping fund the documentary about him called Maybe Logic. And then around the same time they started doing like online classes, like Robert Anton Wilson started the what he called the Maybe Logic Academy. And it was, and this is like in 2000, I don't know, maybe 2002 or something like that.
Whoa.
2001. And so it was online, like university taught by Are You Serious, Robert Anton Wilson. I think Nick Herbert did one. I think Ivan Stang might have done one.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's all these like countercultural legends doing them. And so I took like Robert Anton Wilson's course. So we would like talk online and I would be able to ask him, you know, I'm sure all these bonehead questions. Imagine being like a 70-year-old talking to an 18-year-old. You know what I mean? Just what an idiot I'm sure that I sounded like. But we would like be able to talk and stuff. And then during the premiere of the Maybe Logic thing in Santa Cruz, I went out there and then met him in person there and got to spend some time with him. And then after that, I began just trying to kind of just help in any way I could and just be supportive. And then he was trying to write this book kind of based on his lectures because he'd done so many awesome lectures over the years. So they were going to translate his lectures into sort of a collection, a book collection. And so I was working for him as like a transcriber. So I had all these really like shitty quality lectures that hadn't been published. And I was like, just spent hours and hours, you know, transcribing them, sending him the transcripts. And then unfortunately he died before they put out that book. But I ended up going to his funeral as well. They watched him like dump his ashes into Monterey Bay. And
what was the funeral like?
It was cool, man. It wasn't like maybe I don't know what one would expect, but it was pretty like normal in a sense.
Aliens,
you know?
To show up. Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah. A submarine to come out of the bay and like turn his ashes back into him and then
exactly. Yeah, Eris was there giving it was pretty cool, man. Like a lot of countercultural, you know, those figures were there hanging around, and just some people, his kids were there, and I drank like, you know, I don't know, 10 shots of Jameson.
Fuck.
Out of respect. And yeah, it was wild, man. It was just a good moment. But
so he was one of your serious teachers, like you. Mm-hmm. He was one of the big teachers in your life.
Yes, definitely, man. And I mean, as I said, like I think that not to be that dude, but one of the things I put in the book was in my book was that wisdom without levity is a tragedy.
Wow. You know,
and I think that Raw definitely encapsulated that, and he did that thing that, you know, I was talking about this recently, is that, you know, no one's perfect, and Robert Anton Wilson definitely had his faults, but he was incredibly, incredibly impactful and powerful. But the most valuable thing that I think he contributed to the world and contributed to me in my way of thinking was that you should think for yourself. And he presented his ideas and his work in this cyclical type of way that he swirled around the subjective viewpoint of an objective idea enough to where you had to go, wait a second, hold on a second, what's going on here? What do I think about this? And that was his trick. That's what I say, like that swirling ring that he wore. That's what that always meant to me. It was like that swirl of like, here are all these, you know, impressions or subjective, what he would call a reality tunnel, these different ways of seeing objective reality. And the swirl is being able to step back and go, oh, hold on a second. what is my impression of this and what do I think for myself? And that's this really necessary, crucial lesson to be able to learn how to, you know, something that's important to me is like, how do you author your own future? How do you begin to recognize and increase your self-awareness to relearn, you know, who you are, what you are, who you want to be, and then how you can begin to like respond to your life and walk into a direction that you want, as opposed to just getting into this momentum of pre-programmed chain reactions where you end up living 10 years with your head underwater, you know?
Well, you know, man, I think one reason it's very easy to do that is because for many of us, our experience of nature, our experience of certainly of cities, our experience of anything outside our homes, and for some people, even inside our homes, is marked by the imposition of boundaries. You go to the ocean and there's lifeguards, and quite often there's buoys. You can't swim past those fucking things. A lifeguard gets mad at you. And, you know, this situation of having like these invisible lines placed over reality by people who are theoretically trying to keep you safe has produced for a lot of us, I think, a real fear reaction when you're off the map. Mm-hmm. And man, I love going off the fucking map. But whenever I do make it off the map, so to speak, whoa, it's a little scary because you don't have help now. There isn't that fucking guy you can kind of secretly walk behind to tell you what's happening. There isn't the whistleblowing person. There isn't anything except you and reality. And that's scary. I think these days that terrifies the shit out of people who have really invested themselves in the idea that they figured it out. They did it already. They figured it out, man. They know everything. Carl Sagan figured it out. Neil deGrasse Tyson figured it out. Dawkins, fucking Nietzsche, they all figured it out. I'm just in a well-tended amusement park. And I'll just hang out here and pretend I'm happy until I fucking kick the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times going off the map means breaking the law, doesn't it? It means putting things in your body that are illegal. Sometimes it means trespassing. You got to go into like places where either the government or somebody said don't go there.
Yeah, you got to take weird drugs in weird places.
Weird drugs in weird places, man. And then you just, I love the experience of going off the map, and also I love the experience of the invisible barriers that you're imposing on yourself for maybe no reason. But what would you say those are for you? Now,
that's interesting. I don't know, man. I don't think about life in terms of those barriers now. Like, to me, things just feel fluid and open and just continually evolving and moving forward in a sense that, I think a big way that I stopped feeling like I needed to overcome something was, and doctors hate this. Doctors hate it. And I'm going to tell you about this secret. This is going to put you into the intro of my click funnel.
Doctors hate this fucking secret, yeah. Man.
Doctors hate this secret.
Doctors hate this secret.
Yeah, that this mom's method.
Yeah, foot doctors hate this Tennessee mom's foot secret.
They hate this secret. I'm going to share it in just 5 more minutes after I prime you to go into my funnel. You know, Duncan, you got to go on the buyer's journey.
Please.
I can't just offer you up. I got to qualify the sale first.
What's your secret? What's your fucking secret?
Then you got to go through the buyer's journey.
Click,
you got to
click.
You got to find yourself along the way, and that is the secret.
Damn. No. That was bullshit. All right.
Here's the secret. So, for me, this was very useful. Was what I call like the acceptance of what is, and that sounds super basic, and it is. And the issue. The reason why I think humans have trouble accepting things that are simple is because they don't get to put their human little fingerprints and get them all humified and complexed up and all that stuff and get their stink all over them, you know? But the most simple thing, like accepting what is, to me, was so useful because I sat with that idea literally for like a year of like, I'm going to just, and by accept what is, I don't mean be inactive. I don't mean don't continue to try and like self-develop and refine yourself and so on and improve. I mean to be with what is, the circumstances of being alive, the circumstances of what comes to you, like of the narrative story of the camera view of your mind intersecting with the self-organizing structures of reality and the environment. And instead of trying to make the world like you, like we all do, allow the world to change you somewhat and then also allow you to change the world at the same time. Allow it to this interlocking dance between the arising of your natural brilliance, of like the fullness of what you are coming through from the root of your subconscious, passing through your memory and heart, mind, your emotions and your intellect, and allowing all that to come through without as much resistance as possible. That's like grasping, right? So grasping is allowing the full Duncanness, the richness coming up from, you know, your intuitive conscious mind. And then whenever it passes through the heart, oh, do you need to change this in some emotional way to make it serve some idea or make it serve some resonance that you feel like it must serve? When it passes through the intellectual mind, does the inner critic kick on? Do you feel like you need to, do you feel like you're a piece of shit all of a sudden for some reason? Do you start hating on yourself? Do you feel like you have to shift what you want to come through because that's the only way that you'll be accepted through by the world or whatever it is that comes up in your mind, you know? But really let that thing come through, man, and feel what's coming through, honor that thing, and allow it to intergage and, you know, in lock with the world and for it to all connect and be what is. And to me, the acceptance of letting that come through, and this includes the fuck-ups and the failures and things not going your way, but just being able to like realize that those are more, that's growing pains, and you got to swing with that stuff, man. And like for me, some of the biggest teaching moments I've had has been through failures, has been through things not going my way, because then as I've encountered things that haven't turned out how I've wanted them to, I've then changed my way of thinking, and through that change of thinking ended up at a result way greater than I was even possibly imagining of the thing that didn't go through. It's through that flexibility and that, and this is kind of an Alan Watts idea in some ways, being able to bend with the water and not get all wrapped up in your own story, wrapped up in your ego, wrapped up of your idea of what should be, and allowing what is to unfold and then walking through the doors that open before you.
Okay, I love it. And I'm not good at that. But what about the thing that happens when you're around somebody who isn't doing that? And you become the part of the universe that they're trying to make like them. And then you enter into relationships and situations with people who, yeah, fuck, you might be all open and shit. You're the river and the water, but I'm going to like build a goddamn dam. I'm going to harvest your energy. You know what I mean? I'm going to build, I'm going to fucking, fine. If you want to be all fluid, go ahead. I'm going to fluid your ass into my fucking maze. And I'm going to like, you know what I mean? This happens.
I do.
And this is one of my fears when I think about this kind of stuff. Is like, and I don't think I'm alone in thinking, shit, that's a great way to get exploited. That's you know, that looseness, that openness. That being said, anytime I overcome the tyrannical motherfucker inside of me that wants to produce in every single moment some kind of like fascist version of reality where I'm controlling everything and just give it up and just for a second let the universe do its thing, everything gets so much better. And everything becomes so much more interesting. And that's when the synchronicity start and the epiphany start.
That's right. That's right, man. That's how you know when the synchronicity start. That's how you know that the conduits of being, that you've actually got amongst the conduits of being. That's what synchronicities are, in my opinion.
The conduits like the of being. What do you mean?
Like the fractal web that connects all things. Like the fabric of our universe. That shit gets tuned up like a you know, musical, like a chord on a piano.
Yeah.
And then when the vibrations all get in sync, they create like a beautiful sound. That's like where you hit, you know, a black key and a white key and a piano next to each other, you hear dissonance. If you hit all, you know, white keys, you hear, or the proper, you know, combination of white and black keys, you hear a beautiful resonant sound. And that's things being in tune. And that's like the conduits of being, all that shit. It's all resonance, man. It works in the same way. And if you let go and start like, and stop grasping, then you get amongst that tunage. And that's when the synchronicities appear, because you start being like, oh, cool, I'm walking within the scaffolding that, like, I need to be. Like, life wants us to, you know, we get in the, I hate the word the flow, because it's so sort of, like, overused, but you get in that groove, man. But I think a very important thing to say is that being open in kind of swinging with what is does not mean allowing yourself to be a doormat or allowing yourself to be, you know, have your energy harvested, as you said. Like, that's a big misconception in the earlier stages of people who were trying to be more compassionate.
Yeah.
And it's just a lesson that's got to be learned, is that compassion is not an identity quality. Compassion is an intention. Like, you have to draw strong boundaries for yourself. You have to have, like, this personal sovereignty where, yeah, man, if somebody's trying to suck your energy, like, no, that you're not someone to steal off of. You know?
If I don't get my energy sucked, I won't have any cum from my fountains.
Great point. Important point. Important point. Then you won't be tits up with knowledge, man.
And so you're just saying, it's like, yeah, it's not like you're like becoming some kind of like yellow bellied thing rolling over and letting anybody kick you in this. It's like you still get to have your claws if you need them. You still
That's
get
right.
to like, you know, have a self. I guess what I'm expressing here is just how much I define myself by my defense mechanisms.
So tell me a situation. Well, yeah, like, love is strength, right? Not complacency.
Yeah.
Love right. is like fierce.
Yeah. Kali. Love yeah. is. I'll tell you a situation that happened today. So like, I've somehow, man, I'm on this like quest to start waking up at 5 and working out, and
that's
I
fucked up.
It's
oh, that's not the end of it. Oh, I thought that was the end of it. Okay, no.
Fucked up, man. What's wrong with me?
Yeah, I can't help you with that one, Duncan. I'm sorry, man.
It's working. I'm pulling it off, and it's cool, and it's like really special. The time between 5 and 7 in any city is magic, and so. Yeah, I got up today. This is like, by the way, this is the second time I pulled this off. So sorry if I'm putting out there. I've been doing this like consistently, but 2 for me is a big deal. That's 2, and that's like 2 times and like 2 times of intentionally doing it, not because I had some meeting or some shit, and not because the baby was crying, but 2 times in maybe a decade of like, okay, I'm gonna get up early and I'm gonna start exercising. It's been a while. Anyway, I get to the gym. Their juice bar's closed. I wanted some caffeine, so I go to the Starbucks right up the street. I walk in. There's a guy sitting there, 5 a.m. And I've got in my head, listen, man, that thing we were talking about earlier, this is now a place for me to sit on some dumb ledge of judgment. Like, I'm up at 5. Look at these empty streets.
Yeah, you're
while
doing
they
it.
Sleep, the warrior goes to train. It's been
doctors are going to hate me by the time the sun comes up. I'm going to have all the secrets.
So embarrassing. I've done it twice, and I'm already like, you know what I mean? I'm like acting like I'm Goggins or whatever. It's times. Anyway, so I get to the Starbucks, and there's this guy sitting, and now I'm annoyed because the people in the Starbucks don't seem like, I was thinking like, I'm not going to bet. I just run into like healthy people in the morning. Like, that's where the healthy people are. And this fucking guy's sitting in Starbucks. He's taking his shoes off. His bare feet are hanging there. Okay, whatever. That's fine. But this guy is coughing like, and he's literally sitting right where they serve the fucking lot. Right where they serve the drinks. Like, he's sick. And he's sitting at the place where the drinks come out, and he's sneezing on them like he's part of some satanic germ-ridden assembly line. And like, I'm like, I can't get sick. I'm too busy. I have a baby. I sat there, and as soon as my drink came out, I snatched it, making sure it wasn't sneezed on, and got out of there. But there is an example, man, of like, I'm like pissed at the guy. I'm like mad at the fact that people would just not be so unaware that they would do that fucking shit. And also, there is a piece of me that almost wants to say something to him. Like, germ man, do you see what you're doing? Like, do you understand you're the fucking reason the Black Plague happens?
Yeah, hey, snot wizard, why don't you go practice your magic somewhere else?
It's a snot wizard. It's a morning snot wizard. He's decided to sit and cast spells on everybody's coffee. Blessings, right. I guess, is what he would probably call it. So what about that? That's what I'm talking about. It's like, I cannot be in the flow in those places because my asshole just fucking tightens up and I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah. Okay. I know what you mean. Right. So that, like, I think what you're experiencing in those moments, first off, like, you got to let yourself off the hook because that's just a part of being human, man. Like, we're all going to get into these situations where the world seems to be magnetically opposed to our senses. You know, like that happens to me where I'm just like, oh man, look at this person. Look at this snot wizard over here. But the issue is it's not about not having that feeling because I actually think that's a part of our evolutionary, like ancient brain is that because ultimately this is the most heartening thought ever is that we are a hotel for our DNA. And that we're designed on a genetic level to just reproduce, essentially, right? And so everything about us is designed to somehow lull ourselves into the illusion that we are at least better than that guy at the snot bar, you know? That we're at least better than him so that we deserve to continue on. We have the self-belief and the conviction to continue on, to reproduce, to take resources and so on, right?
Yes.
And that's why you're sitting in the example I've used before is like you're sitting, I don't want to bust at any, you know, this isn't worth new examples. So the example I've used before, when you're sitting in the traffic or whatever and someone walks across the crosswalk and you're like, oh, look at that douchebag. It's like, what? Like, why did I think that?
Yeah.
Like that guy's someone's son. He's probably super nice. He's probably interesting or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, what is that thought? Well, I think that's an evolutionary ancient brain thing going, hey, yo, Duncan, you're better than that guy. So you deserve to have a steak tonight because he didn't need any meat. He should have vegetables, you know?
Yeah.
He should be weak and whatever. So it's not about having that thought. It's about recognizing that thought and then having, you know, the space, the negative space internally and being mindful enough to then choose what to do with that thought. So another thing I put in my book is that you are not your thoughts. You are your thoughts. You turn into action. Because we have 40,000 thoughts a day. And some of those thoughts are going to be great. Some of those thoughts are going to be, you know, judgmental and critical and whatever of ourselves, of others. So as all of those thoughts go through and flow through us constantly all day, like as the clouds roll underneath the sun, you know, our consciousness is the sun, shining down. And all these thoughts are the clouds. And so as the dark, stormy ones come by, as the negative thoughts come by, the thoughts of judgments, the thought that makes you want to go like, man, fuck that guy, that snot wizard, what you become, what you build into your future self is what you choose to grab and to express. And so by recognizing that thought, and you succeeded. You just like saw the sight, you had an impulse to want to say something to him, to get really wrapped up in it and get really pissed off. And you're able to just like, okay, you recognized it and you let it flow on. That is taking one small step into building yourself into the Duncan that has fewer of those thoughts and that suffers from, firstly, not being identified as a person that ever would express that type of negativity and melt that into actually who you are, but being able to let that go into infinity. And the amazing thing about that way of thinking is this is something I realized from my own personal like path of this was I realized that as I like, you know, back in my younger years, whenever I was a narcissistic little prick and full of anger and vinegar and what have you, before all of the psychedelics and meditation, I realized that like there was always this tiny little ember in there. It was like this ember of positivity, of love, of like complete infinite compassion that was buried amongst the ash of all of this other stuff that had been burned to the ground, you know, all this suffering. And I started just paying attention to that little ember. And I started thinking literally like, if I can just give that ember some air, it's going to catch a little bit more fire. And that fire can grow and grow and grow. I need to start indulging that part of what I know is in me, you know, and I started really like focusing on that person, that Corey within me, that element of me. And the more I could just, you know, of course I was still doing, like, you know, saying mean things and being judgmental and just being a first class, you know, cynical asshole all over the place. But I was still like letting that, like, okay, I need to come back to that thing. And the more I did that, the more that started to take over. And over the course of a long time, in periods of like what I call existential paralysis, of feeling completely like depersonalized and disembodied and overwhelmed by my head mind as opposed to like the heart mind and all that stuff, like just always choosing and like coming back and trusting that space and allowing that to keep growing. Is that it really eventually overwhelmed the dark side, right? And it began to take over. And only later by reading like neuroscience did I realize what was happening on like a physiological level was that given that, you know, the neuroplasticity of our brains rewire, because, you know, for anyone that isn't like hip to that, essentially we have thoughts because, you know, this is super rudimentary, but like the neurons in our brains sig electrical impulses to each other through synapses, which are these connective little roadways. And because our biology is all about optimization, because it takes a lot of energy to be a human critter, you know, like the brain, the electricity that's in the brain can power like a small light bulb or whatever. So it's always trying to make that pathway easier, more simple.
I'm sorry, if I could just stop you there. The electricity in my brain actually powers a medium-sized light bulb.
I was thinking a fluorescent light bulb.
I mean, like in a lighthouse.
I was going to say, are you being humble again, Duncan? Dude, you're amazing, man. This is the best.
I'm sorry. Tell me what. Neuroplasticity. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Why the fuck did I do that? I didn't mean to cut you off with neuroplasticity.
You know what I call that, Duncan? I call that being a good boy, which you just did.
What's apologizing?
No. The like having the thing that's so fun in the brain that you got to interject and drop it in. I love that. It's being cool. The good boy.
Okay, thank you. You're the opposite of a snot wizard.
thank you.
Okay, so the neuroplasticity.
I'm a cosmic Kleenex. Okay, so I look at those things also, like the chiming in thing. I'm all about it because it's like I feel like in the same way as like in a gospel situation, like an Episcopal church, whenever people are singing and someone's giving a sermon, and then the people in the audience are shouting like yes or like there's, you know, what do they say? Fuck yeah. Whatever.
I don't think they say fuck yeah, but that would be.
Oh, they don't.
Fuck yeah!
But you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
that is like, that's the psychic high five, man. So I like those.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, neuroplasticity. So, basically, the habitual thoughts in your brain, your brain rewires to make those roadway connections easier and more direct, so that as the, you know, whenever one set of neurons try and connects to another set, the synapses is a shorter distance, so it takes less of your abundant electricity in your brain, Duncan, to make that connection, right? And so as you can get yourself into habitual thinking patterns, what happens is that the way that your brain thinks by default starts to shift and change over time. You know, I think it takes like 60 days to start that connection, and then that just continues to compound from there. Well, what's interesting about that is that if you use mindfulness, and that's why meditation is so valuable. It doesn't even have to be this big, you know, thing filled with the stink of religiosity. It's just a simple practice of taking the phone off the hook, you know, your brain, for 5, 10, 20 minutes a day and sitting and breathing. You simply, it's as easy as this. You know, as I say, you do it every night when you sleep. You just have to do it when you're awake, right? Is you just breathe in and then exhale. And allow the muscles in your face and body to soften. Breathe in again. Try and imagine breathing in something like life, like whatever that means to you. Exhale. Allow your face and all your muscles to soften a little bit more. And just make it that simple. Do that for 5 minutes a day, and you'll begin to feel that negative space. More space between impulse and action. And that's the space you need to be able to begin to author your future and choose how you want to show up in the world and how you want to. Do you want to indulge that negative thought, or do you want to try and walk into this image, walk into this idea, in this honor of something more peaceful, something more open, something more filled with a relentless curiosity and wonder, as opposed to the gnashing teeth of judgment and anger and fear? And so as you begin to do that more, your brain starts rewiring in a path to make those thoughts more easy, to make the positive thoughts, to make that what comes up with you naturally. And what's crazy about it and I just know this from, because I lived through it, I figured this out by living it, is that as that begins to shift, when you go to look at, you know, the entire world in your daily life, the all of the nuances, the impression, the overall harmonic that's created from all of the tones happening in the world become by default more positive.
Wow.
You start seeing the world in a different way. You start, the world begins looking more full of wonder.
You know what?
More like a peaceful place.
This is a thing that hopefully you will be down to do part two of this with me, because I have a theory about this these days. It's fucking crazy, but it's not just that the world looks differently; it's literally different. Like maybe you're moving into another realm when you do these practices. And like if your internal neurological structure and the quantum flow of energy in your brain is being changed, then who the fuck knows what's really happening? Are we literally moving into some other aspect of the multiverse? Is it like, because to me, it's like, man, I know what you're saying. And the times I've been lucky enough to experience this thing you're talking about, where it's like you get done with this and it's a different universe. This is something John Lilly used to say. You get out of the float tank, you're in a new dimension, man.
You're a dolphin. You're a dolphin in a Speedo, man.
Yeah. But like this is to me like a one, and I think that talking about this shit could be a little confusing for people who are just interested in meditating and learning how to get a little peace. But my God, man, there's like, to me, when Christ says the kingdom of heaven is inside of you, when Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche talks about Shambhala, when you hear over and over and over again in all these religions and all these mythologies about the existence of the fountain of youth, the hidden city, the like whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And here in the modern times, we're like, yeah, that's a really beautiful metaphor. But sometimes, depending on how many edibles I've consumed, sometimes I think they mean it.
Yeah.
Do you ever wonder if there would be, you hear this shit about ascension, you mm-hmm. know? Do you ever, or like the goddamn Dzogchen people turn themselves into rainbows?
Sure.
Do you buy into that stuff, Corey?
Well, I don't buy into the Dzogchen notion of like, man, that's a nice little, that's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
Dzogchen
the Dzogchen notion. It's only the motion in the Dzogchen notion that, you know, as far as like, man, he was there meditating and then I looked over and it was just hair and fingernails. You know, I think that type of thing is a bit of a metaphorical way that we can get an idea or concept in our mind and begin to aim towards that, you know, yeah. as a kind of a hypothetical. But as far as like literalness, I absolutely think that like speaking of Chogyam, you know, I raise Wind Horse every morning, you know.
Can you tell people what that is so people maybe don't know what that is and it sounds crazy?
Sure.
When you just say it, if no one's ever heard of it, like, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's basically just, I mean, okay. So in short, it's bringing in energy. It's consciously during meditation, drawing in source energy. That's the easiest way for me to describe it.
Okay.
And I look at it as it's a very literal thing. The idea is, you know, raising wind horse is drawing in all of like the life force into your body. And, you know, someone can hear that and say, okay, well, how many crystals are you surrounded with whenever you're doing this, whatever?
How much crystal meth are you surrounded by?
Yeah. I'm actually perched on top of a mountain of crystal meth during that. That's the horse that I ride is a white horse.
Shambhala is actually a city on a crystal meth mountain.
Absolutely. They just mine that shit right out of the mountain and they're good to go.
My daddy died in the meth mines.
Yeah. But think of it in this way. Like I'm very much like, I think that casting the net of the hypothetical and the speculative is crucial towards finding out what's next and exploring your mind and the world. But I also think it's equally important to not spiritual bypass and delude yourself by believing every bit of flotsam and jetsam that you pull back up out of the water. You have to run that shit through your rational kind of scientific materialist filter to say, okay, like, what's testable? And I like things that have one hand in the scientific materialism and then a couple of fingers into the spiritual mystic, and I want those things to lock together, and that's the stuff that I tend to be drawn towards.
Me too, and it's important, because otherwise, let me tell you, if you put the whole fist in that other side, you are going to end up embarrassing yourself, man.
Either one, man. Yeah, if you spend all your time fisting science, then you're going to be a cold, boring, reductive motherfucker. And if you spend all your time fisting, mysticism, you're going to be a self-deluded. You're going to keep wondering why things don't work out, and why people are against you, and why others don't get it. In quotes.
Definitely in quotes. And you're going to have a manic fucking episode, and you're going to make some really dumb tweets and blog posts, and then you're going to get both roads lead to a really dark place. But like, I know what you're saying, like, and I love, this is what we have now, is like the flotsam and jetsam of hundreds of different mythologies, hundreds of different philosophies, millions, but I don't know, thousands that you could look at, and then also grounding us. We've got this fantastic, like, beautiful, deep understanding of cosmology and physics, and they both mirror each other to some degree. Mm-hmm. Man, why do I didn't mean to, some obvious fucking point. I have got to go. It's 12:12. I'm running late for a thing. This podcast popped up out of the blue. I should have expected that I would want to talk to you for 1,000 hours. But fortunately for my listeners, they can listen to you for, I don't know if it's 1,000 hours, but you have a beautiful podcast called The Astral Hustle. Am I correct about that?
You nailed it.
And you've got a wonderful Patreon. You actually, I believe, are a meditation teacher. You've been helping people. You work directly with people, like Robert Anton Wilson used to work with you, correct?
I'll allow you to call me that.
Okay. All right. I don't know the name for it. Whatever.
I have this theory of, like, we shouldn't be able to call ourselves artists or teachers. Only other people should be able to call us artists and teachers.
See, there's the bound. There's one of your boundaries, Mr.
Gets the stink off of it, man. It's a way to inoculate yourself against arrogance.
And well, look, I'll tell you this. I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Pima Chodron. Sorry if it's not you, Pima. Not you. Listen, she doesn't listen to my fucking podcast.
I bet she's on the edge of her cushion right now.
Talk about the height of fucking narcissism. Talking to, like, Pima fucking Chodron. Listen to your podcast. Jesus Christ. What's wrong with me? But one of these beautiful, brilliant people, I don't think it was her, actually said, die a teacher. And, like, it was this wonderful permission. And I think Robert Anton Wilson's, I make you a pope. And, like, now you're a pope. And I make you a teacher. Damn it. So there you go, whether you like it or not. And you get to now teach. And speaking of teaching.
That's a lot of enlightenment coming through right there.
My friend. One last thing, just so I can continue to plug all this beautiful stuff you're putting out here. Now is the Way is your new book coming out, and it is available for pre-sale right now. I don't know when this podcast comes up. I'm just saying that in case it comes out before Tuesday. If you're listening to this after Tuesday, it's there for you. Man, listen, I love podcasting, and God damn it, thank you for having this conversation with me, and thank you for doing it, like, chaotically, and I this was a wonderful conversation, and it is,
man,
giving me, Duncan, a lot to think about.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you. I really appreciate it, and I love podcasting too, and it's always it's just a real pleasure, and it's you know, these conversations, that they're like kind of like magic, right? They feel special. You go somewhere with them, and it's just a beautiful time. So thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it. And also, you know, you said it's chaotic, but no, all chaos is calm if you're cool, man.
Wow, cool. Oh, hey, I'm going to send you a cum bird.
I can't wait.
I'll talk to you soon, Corey.
By that, I mean, you mean a dead one that's been preserved in amber fluid or something, so I can keep it forever, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's 30% of my income comes from my online cum bird business. my amberized cumberds on Etsy.
.com. Email, that's what my, I know you got to go, but that's one of my big jokes I do all the time just in life is like, email me at Corey@amberizedcumberds.com. That's
it's actually .com.
.com, yeah.
Hey,
that's,
man,
the best way to get a hold of me.
I will chat with you soon. Let's please do this again. And I can't wait to get a copy of your book. And Hare Krishna. That was Corey Allen. Make sure you listen to his podcast, The Astral Hustle. And you can find his book at CoreyAllen.com. Thank you, Bombas, for the socks and for sponsoring this episode. Get 20% off. Go to Bombas. Use offer code Duncan. And thank you for listening. We'll be back later on this week with David Nickturn. Until then, Hare Krishna.